Welcome to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. The Crown Estate manages the seabed and much of the coastline around England, Wales, and Northern Ireland. As such, they've developed a world-class expertise in offshore wind generation. That involves dozens of industries and stakeholders, from fishing fleets to ocean floor cable owners. Joe Sykes, a marine spatial planner with Crown Estate, found that technology is key to coordinating that complex juggling act.
The Crown Estate is in a great position to convene those different stakeholder groups together and start to have those conversations where there might be areas of interest for future development for, say, offshore wind or for marine aggregates dredging or new telecommunications cables. Visualizing all of those activities together is so important.
Joe Sykes tells Esri's Karen Sullivan how using geospatial technology naturally enables engagement with a wide variety of stakeholders.
Joe, hello, and welcome to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Crown Estate manages one of the largest rural land holdings and much of the coastline of England, Wales, and Northern Ireland. And as a result, you've had a major role in developing offshore wind energy. You have these huge turbines just off the coast, and they've been very successful in generating a tremendous amount of energy. And I understand almost half the homes in the UK could be powered from this energy source. Tell us a bit about how that works.
As an island nation, the United Kingdom has really excellent conditions for the development of offshore wind. Therefore, the UK is a global leader in the industry's development and has been for the past 25 years. As you said, these turbines that we have offshore are really large in comparison to what you might see with onshore wind turbines. So each of these turbines can be three times the height of Big Ben or three times the height of the Statue of Liberty, and they're really productive as well. So in the last year, the offshore wind farms around England, Wales, and Northern Ireland have generated the equivalent clean energy to power over half of the UK homes last year. So that's 12 million homes. That's a really big step in helping the UK from moving away from dependency on fossil fuels and boosting energy security.
And even though you've done a tremendous job having the capacity to power half the homes in the UK, there is a target to reach 95% clean power generation by 2030. And that suggests a real urgency to increase capacity of offshore wind power. Tell us about that.
The UK has a really ambitious target for reaching net zero. And we've announced the next 20 to 30 gigawatts of offshore wind development off the coast of England and Wales. So to put that in perspective, a gigawatt of offshore wind capacity would be enough to power around a million homes. So that's another 20 to 30 million homes that we're looking to lease the seabed rights for out to 2030.
You've built these wind turbines right in the ocean where you've got many other industries operating. Telecom cables are there on the seabed, fishing vessels use the ports. It's very complex to operate in this environment. And to make this work, you're looking at data from more than 250 different sources and 10 sectors. Tell us about that.
You've hit one of the key challenges that we face in the marine space. It's a really, really busy environment, and it's really challenging to identify and show visually those different users and interests in the marine space. When you look out into the marine space, it mostly looks like a beautiful oceanscape, not very busy, but the reality is there are many, many interests and many users of that marine space, and it's all about planning with all of that in mind, making sure that we have data that best represents those interests and those activities. And we work really closely with all of our stakeholders, everyone else who has a vested interest in the marine space, to make sure that the data accurately reflects reality for their interests, to make sure that we are working together to make optimal use of this marine space.
What kind of data are you looking at?
So an example would be navigation intensity over a year period, say. So we can see where ships are coming and going on average throughout the year, and we can map that and visually look at where those areas are in comparison to, say, where the fishing effort is. And that can be displayed in many different ways. You could look at where those fishing vessels are. You could look at how much fish they're catching in those different spatial areas. So we take all of these different users and bring those data sets together to have a view of where are the really challenging areas for development, where are there lots of other users that we need to be careful and respect their interests, and where are there areas where there might not be as much activity, where are areas where we can work together to look at different opportunities for new developments and existing interests to potentially interact in the same space.
That sounds like a definitely a lot going on. How do you manage all of this data?
It's really hard. There's a lot of data and a lot of information, and in some cases, lots of different versions of potentially the same information. There's lots of ways that you can look at, say, shipping intensity. There's lots of different data sources. So we work really, really closely with the stakeholders that have these interests and are the, in most cases, the official body who would manage that. So we work with them to make sure that the data that we have accurately reflects their interests and accurately reflects the reality in the marine space.
You're taking information from each industry, the fishing industry, the shipping industry, and you can see that information on a map, and that is the spatial component. Tell us a bit about how that works.
Yeah, absolutely. So having a spatial representation of all of these different activities means that we can look at those in comparison with each other. We can engage with these different stakeholder groups. And actually, the Crown Estate is in a great position to convene those different stakeholder groups together and start to have those conversations where there might be areas of interest for future development for, say, offshore wind or for marine aggregates dredging or new telecommunications cables, bringing the other stakeholders who have an interest in that area together to all have that conversation and work through optimizing that space together. So having that spatial data, visualizing all of those activities together, is so important and really is the foundation of our engagement with stakeholders and the work that we do to plan the marine space. Because all of these things tend to have thousands of tons of water on top of them, so it can be quite challenging to keep tabs on it all of the time.
So, Joe, what are some of the important lessons that you've learned about operating in such a complex environment?
Yeah, so I think beyond just having really high quality data, it's so vital in the work that we do where you're bringing together data sets that represent so many disparate activities that come from all over the place that you are bringing them together in a controlled, organized way. Everything's really clear. You're, even as far as your naming conventions, metadata, all of that good, fun stuff is so important to make sure that you're really clear in what your inputs are. So your outputs are only ever going to be as good as your inputs. So we work really, really hard and have an incredible team that works through managing these data sets that we don't own, that come to us from other organizations, and making sure that they are in the right format, that they play nicely with other data sets, that we can just very quickly grab some information and have a visual representation for a user and interest in the marine space. If I want to look at a particular habitat type, I can just go and grab it and see it. And that's so important when you're engaging with others as well, that you're able to say, yes, we are. Look at how we are considering your interests. Look at the information mm-hmm. that we have. Everything's neat and tidy, but also that it's really high quality information that you can then easily use and bring into the conversations that you're having with others.
It sounds like this is the value of really high quality data, that you can understand conditions as they are changing.
Absolutely. You're not just bringing your stakeholder, you're not just bringing their expertise and their input into the process, into the decisions that we're making, but also you've got the data that represents their activities and that it is as close to reality as possible.
Did you give everyone this, or do you give everyone the same guidelines for participating?
It's really important that all of the information can play nicely together, but there is a wide breadth of organizations that we work with in the marine space, and there are so many very niche interests that we have to have represented in our work. And when you look at the different data sources that we have, they come from huge organizations down to very, very specific, almost individuals who have information. So you wouldn't expect the same level of data quality and assurance from, say, an oil and gas developer versus a fisherman on a single vessel that's giving us information about fish. Because the information that you can have for those individual data sets that might not be huge national scale information, but very specific niche interests is just as important. And it's really key that we have a responsibility in our role to bring that onto a level playing field so that all users and interests in the marine space are considered, and that any information that we can get, we do get, we process, and we use in our decision making, because you're never going to get to the absolute reality, but you can get as close as possible. And I think the important thing about getting as close as possible is you have to listen to everyone. You have to go and get the information that you can that exists out there. Work with people to make sure that whatever they have is represented. Even if it's a meeting with someone who has an interest in a particular place in the marine space, and it's a paper map that they've drawn a box on, digitizing that, bringing that into the same systems and comparing that against all the other information that we might have is so important to make sure that that is all represented.
So maintaining data that can help you understand how conditions are changing, that is one of the important lessons that you've learned. What are some of the other lessons that you've learned?
As the Crown Estate gives all of our net revenue profit back to the Treasury for the nation, it's really important that when we're making these decisions, that we're considering everything in the round and making sure that we're planning not just any individual sector on its own. We're not just looking for where's the best place for an offshore wind farm. We're saying where's the best place for an offshore wind farm in consideration of all other users, but then also the development and future of those sectors and also the sectors that the Crown Estate manages. So it's really important that we're zooming out, looking at the wider picture and making sure that we're planning at that systems level rather than on a project by project basis, because the marine space is already busy. It's getting busier. The ambition is enormous for the use of the marine space and how all of these industries and sectors are going to grow. And the demand for space is looking like 10 times as much as it is right now. So it's really important that we're making very sensible decisions at this point in time as we plan out to, say, the year 2050, because there are opportunities and there are challenges based on where we want to operate. And we need to start thinking about that now. We need to be working with everyone now to make sure that we don't regret any of those decisions in 20, 30 years' time.
it's a massive shift to move a country from a well-established traditional energy source, like perhaps coal in the UK, to building huge wind turbines and putting them on the ocean floor. And to make that shift, you've had to find people in the UK workforce who have skills that are transferable. Could you give us some examples of how this has worked?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you say, the UK has a history of these sorts of large infrastructure projects, even ones that are out in the middle of the ocean. So when you look at offshore oil and gas as an industry and the platforms that are constructed out in various parts of the marine space around the UK, it would be a fair comment to make that there are definitely transferable skills between existing oil and gas and the sorts of skills that we need in the offshore wind industry. It's not just the construction of these huge offshore infrastructure projects, it's also the operation and the maintenance of them. So loads and loads of transferable skills between these large infrastructure projects that have come before in the UK and what we're looking at for developing the supply chain for sectors such as offshore wind and the development of those in the marine space. There's a huge opportunity in renewables for jobs and the economy in the UK. So there are 40,000 people who are employed in the offshore wind industry, which is up 24% in the last 2 years in the UK. And specifically, we've launched the latest offshore wind leasing round of offshore wind leasing round 5, which is in the Celtic Sea, which is in the southwest part of the UK. And the development of 3 floating offshore wind farms in that area could generate up to 5,500 jobs and £1.4 billion in economic growth for the UK. So it's really important when you're looking at the skills required, the transferable skills that you can have from other industries that are long-standing in the UK, that you look at that full supply chain all the way from consenting a project all the way through its construction and then out to the operation and maintenance, that you can see that all the way along that supply chain, all the way from inception to operation and maintenance, that there are really important skills and really highly skilled jobs that are available, many transferable skills from those other industries that can be used to help with this push towards renewables in the UK.
What kinds of lessons are you sharing with other countries? And who is getting this right?
The challenge that we are looking to meet in the UK is not necessarily a unique challenge. There are many other nations around the world who have very similar conditions, have very similar marine industries that need consideration when you look at future planning. But potentially we're taking a relatively unique approach to meeting those challenges. So we have our marine delivery route map, which is this whole idea of having this systems level view, making sure that we're bringing everyone together, bringing all the stakeholders and making this best use of this of the marine space. That is the sort of approach that could be used around the world, and engaging with other nations on that is really exciting. I think that having spatial analysis really is the heart of the work that we do, is an approach that other nations can use and want to use, and we've spoken to them, to a number of different interested people who can see that replication of the work that we have been doing is possible where they are. So bringing data together, convening people and making sure that nature is at the heart of the of your planning to reach all of these different diverse goals. It could be very different. They could have in a nation, they could have very different targets, very different energy mixes. They might have more or less of some of the activities that we have around the UK, but the fundamental part of what we're doing and the fundamental part of the marine delivery route map and the work that we do is bringing that information together, bringing people together, collaborating and making these best decisions.
It's fascinating to learn about the complex work that you're doing in this very critical environment. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much, Karen. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. And thanks to Joe Sykes. If you like this episode, please share it with a colleague.